Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings podcast with Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist. Control Talk Now, your source for control news you can use. And now, here is Eric.
Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings video and podcast for the week ending March 22nd, 2015. I am joined as usual by the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kenny, welcome to another week of Control Talk.
Thank you, Eric. Glad to be here again. Getting closer and closer to spring. It's the first day of spring, isn't it?
It feels like the first day of spring down here in Atlanta, big dog. I tell you what, it is it's beautiful outside. The sun's out. We're anxiously awaiting. My wife is due at any minute, as you know, so I could be going down to the baby-making place here soon.
Hang in there, Anna. We wish you all the best from Pittsburgh.
And how you doing up there, buddy? So what? How's your first day of spring?
It's pretty miserable. 42 degrees and rainy. But I'm not complaining. Don't get me started on the weather. We're trying our best to get the golf clubs out and hit them, but it's Mother Nature's just making us wait and wait and wait. So,
well, I tell you what, I can tell you right now, I know a group of people that are having a great time, which is the team that's down at the Johnson Controls Business Conference in Orlando, Florida. As a matter of fact, that was Ian Young from Johnson Controls. He did a little intro for us, a shout out at the last Control Trends conference we were at in Arizona. So thanks very much, Ian, for that, also known as 007. So if you want to buy Johnson Controls, you can get a shot at 007 with your controls. But our Rob Allen's going to be down there this week, Kenny. He's going to be covering it. He'll be touching base each day, giving us an update on what's happening at the JCI Business Conference. Hey, what were your thoughts on last year's? It was pretty phenomenal, wasn't it?
The last one in Arizona was, again, you know, being in the business, having that kind of coaching and have that kind of managerial insight to the way the business is changing, particularly with the Y generation, the X generation, the Z generation, and what's to come. So having that ability to put all that into, you know, 2 or 3 days, of it maximizes the time, and it was very pleasurable, too. It was a great resort facility, and I miss it. You know.
Yeah, so. Well, they do a really great job, Kenny, I think, of mixing business and pleasure. And, you know, some great events last year. I'm fascinated to know who their speakers are this year. They sort of keep that under their hat. But last year we had Rocky Beyer and a Navy SEAL. And like you said, they really, I think, listened to the customers. And, you know, the customers said, hey, look, we want to know some about your product and your vision. But more than anything else, help us become better business people. And Johnson rose to that occasion. So can't wait to hear and see what they come up with this year. Rick Van Buren puts that on for Johnson Controls. He did a spectacular job last year, and I know he's going to do a great job this year. And again, if we weren't doing baby time, we'd be down there. And but I think we're probably in pretty good hands with Rob Allen of 7 Minutes in Control. Rob will be down there covering the conference. And as you can see from our new intro, Rob put that together. So he's a very talented interviewer and becoming a very talented editor as well as photographer and videographer. So. Looking forward to seeing what Rob comes up with from the conference. And again, to all our friends at JCI, hey, we miss you. Sorry we're not there. Have a great conference.
Indeed, Aaron.
Indeed, Kenny. Well, I tell you what, let's get to it this week. What do we have up first, big dog?
First up, Eric, we had the Train Engineers Newsletter Live, Applying Variable Refrigerant Flow. And that, of course, was a carry-on from the previous Control Talk Now last week, where we actually got into whether or not VRF, variable refrigerant flow, was a threat to life as we know it in the year 2015 for distributors and contractors that rely on installing multiple systems and multiple parts, you know. And so we have a little bit more to talk about. We went to the website and we found out that Train had a marvelous, you know, presentation. And actually, we know that the variable refrigerant flow is a spinoff from the variable speed technology that advanced dramatically over the past years from VAVs, variable air volume handlers, VFDs, variable frequency drives, pumps and fans. And then we got VRF, which is variable refrigerant flow and variable refrigerant volume. And some of the obvious advantages, you know, why these multi-splits and mini-splits are very, application functional, you know, why they have a small footprint inside the space. Basically, it's a decentralized system for zone comfort, its efficiency. You pay for what you use. It's flexible. It's considered to be simple to design, easy to install and commission, and good value for the buck. But if you go to the train, hour and a half, it's 88 minutes. But I'll tell you what, it's such an engineering intensive video that if you watch it, you get 1.5 CEUs, continuing education units, because it's so technically sound. And it's just, if you want to know about variable refrigerant flow, watch that video. But they also talk about, you know, some of the concerns that ASHRAE has, ASHRAE standards 15 and 90.1 to meet the ventilation requirements. You know, you need to have sometimes a separate system in addition to the VRF system to address fresh air, indoor air quality, CO2 concerns. So it's a good post. It's very technical, but I think as we keep track of these trends, having a good baseline understanding of what it means and how it works is always a good starting place.
Well, yeah, Kenny, it is. And again, we have, for our listeners who might be just tuning in, Kenny and I have sort of identified this as a possible threat to life as we know it in the controls world. There's several of those. There's several people that are coming in from the outside with new technologies, including people like Apple, Dell, and Intel, Cisco. So they're getting involved. Not that they haven't in the past, but some of the technological advances are such that it's a little bit concerning. And the VRF is something that we know that market's growing very rapidly. They're making a lot of inroads. And, of course, the big concern from the control side is, well, they don't use the same type of controls that we sell, which, as some of my other distributor brethren have said, well, you know, how much new construction are you getting anyway, which is not a lot. But I think that where it's concerning to me, as I mentioned last week, Kenny, is that if this really takes over in the new construction market in a big way, there's not going to be as much retrofit opportunity down the line. And that's where a lot of the distributors get involved, as well as the systems integrators, with more negotiated work instead of bid and new construction work. So it's interesting. Now, the ventilation side to me is fascinating. So that seems like that could open up some opportunities still for the dampers, maybe even the economizers, Kenny, like the Blimo Zip economizer or the Honeywell Jade economizer. So seems like that's an opportunity. The other control opportunity that we've been tracking, and I'm curious if ASHRAE mentioned this too, is because that refrigeration is coming at such high pressure that if there's a leak or a mishap, you are really expelling a lot of refrigerant into the atmosphere. So it would seem like there'd be a big market for refrigeration monitors as well, and more sophistication with that. Now, I understand from talking with different people across the country that that's not necessarily the case right now where heavy-duty refrigeration monitors are required.
Well, ASHRAE does a good job of protecting you know, the general public interest at large, and I think the refrigerant detection will become an integral part, as will all indoor air quality. I'm sure that you know, if you put a network out there, you know, and you're monitoring indoor air quality and CO2, which is required for fresh air and makeup air, you're certainly going to be able to add a refrigerant monitoring system. You know, we use that. Honeywell Analytics is very popular and very, I think, very reasonably priced and are easy to put in. So once you get a network in, you can just connect to the back net, and away you go.
So that's cool stuff. And it seems like our friends at Daikin are big players in that, Kenny. Seems like they're one of them and Mitsubishi, I think, are the two biggest players. So,
there's seven companies in Japan and two in Korea, Sanyo and LG. But Sony's in it, Panasonic, Fujitsu, Mitsubishi, Daikin, and one more. But you're right. But now we got the big guys in America. Now you get the big equipment manufacturers. You got Train, York, Johnson has a good York system, and Train, like I say, they're ready to go too. So they provide all sorts of you know, HVAC equipment, but they also have a very strong VRF product platform.
Now, do you ever see distributors like us getting more involved with the equipment sales? I don't know about your company. I know DMS Controls, how you guys started, but I didn't know about, you know, the original, the Smyers company. I know Stromquist started as a rep. That's what we did. We got equipment specified and sold it. So we do still have a couple of product lines that we rep as opposed to distribute. But I'm wondering if maybe one of the trends might be that that people like Daikin will reach out to people like us and say, hey, you know, we want to have a chain, if you will, a distribution chain that really understands building automation controls and integration. So, Kevin Fasanelli, if you're listening, we're willing to talk.
Well, they've got their channel pretty well established. That's the disheartening aspect is these are being added to an already existing channel. And like in our area, we have an engineering company that pretty well owns that. Well, they've got some good competition. I mean, you have different manufacturers, but for us, we always had the, you know, we controlled the media. As Scott Cochran always said, you know, we push air and water through a building, and we control comfort and pressure and temperature, humidity, and that was our you know, sweet spot. Now, but there was a lot of distributors that did equipment, you know, CG&A, for instance. If you look at some of the line cards of some of these guys, most of them, especially in the East Coast and center of America, they have a big line of equipment, you know, so they've got they got their bases pretty well covered. But I think you're right. I think ultimately you're going to be you're not going to be able to stay where you're at in the sweet spot on the you know, the XY axis. You're going to have to move this way or move that way, get into equipment and get your line and get started, maybe take a new line on, or go back you know, off of the equipment and the reliance on aftermarket sales and do a lot of systems you know, integration and become a master of a new art, you know, a new way to deploy stuff and use it and create energy and operational savings. So, but you're not going to be able to stay exactly where you're at, that's for sure.
Well, again, I echo what you say. Thanks to our friends at Train for that very informative video. I mean, everything you sort of need to know about VFRs. So, cool stuff, Kenny. What do we have up next?
Next up, Eric, we had live event, Introduction to DDC Controls, Part 1. This was done, again, by the one and only Rob Allen. He gets the group up to speed, the basics of DDC, to include what DDC means, direct digital controls. Why don't you tell us a bit more about that? It was held at Stromquist, and it was a live event.
Well, it was. One of our, if you've been going to Control Trends for a while, you know that one of our most viewed courses is the basics of DDC controls that Rob Allen put together. Still up on the side. It's about 3-4 years old now, and Rob is updating it. But it really gets into DDC from the perspective of Kenny, somebody that came into the industry that really didn't understand DDC. Rob came from a completely different background. And when he first came, he said, look, you know what? I've sort of had to figure my way through this. I've had a lot of help. But for somebody that really, you know, doesn't have experience in this, it can be really confusing and daunting. So Rob sort of approached the basics of DDC really and truly from the aspect of somebody who maybe doesn't know anything at all about DDC control. So he breaks down the terminology, and then he gets more sophisticated with the strategy. So Rob actually redid this. We had a group in to Atlanta. We did a live stream on it, and then this is a recording of Rob's part one. I think it's 7 parts, but he's got 3 updated parts, and we'll be putting that into the training class that we have online that's offered for free. So it's great to check out, especially if you are curious about DDC and maybe a little intimidated and just think it might be a little too complicated. Rob does a great job of breaking it down so you can understand it. So I encourage you to check that out for sure.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, again, there's always got to be a starting point. When somebody comes into the business, how to come into these kind of intros really gets you in the right direction. And then it's available online, so you can go, you can learn as your time allows you, as you know, at your own pace. And it's free. So it's great stuff.
Yeah, you know, one of my teachers, Marshall Thurber, who we talk a lot about, great communicator, great advisor to, you know, people like Anthony Robbins and people like that. But Marshall, you know, one of his core concepts is something called stable datum, which basically means that everybody has to understand what certain terms mean. And I think too often when we've done something for many, many years, it becomes very easy for us. We forget and we just assume that people know certain things that they may or may not. And then it just creates kind of a loop because if you're new to this and you sort of get embarrassed maybe about, am I asking a stupid question here? So, again, I think the advantage with Rob is that he's breaking it down from a beginner's perspective and really laying it out. Now, later on in this course, he gets Michael Bonner up, and Mike is a seasoned DDC professional, worked for a systems integrator for many, many years, and one of the best tech support guys around. So the course does get some more technical aspects on it that becomes very useful for people that have been seasoned and been around the business for a while. So what do we have up next, Mr. Kenny?
Next up, we have Fred Gordy from McKinney's sharing a video with us on how to use social engineering to hack into a system. And when we talk about our trends, and this thing here just keeps getting more and more big and ominous. And you had a good discussion with Fred where he covered that no matter how good your cybersecurity system is, the biggest hole is the human element. The biggest threat to cybersecurity is people with passwords and some of the clever young hackers out there. Why don't you tell us about the conversation you had with Fred?
Well, I got to go down and see Fred Gordy at McKinney's and visit Fred. Fred is just a super guy. He's a cybersecurity evangelist. He does all the IT down at McKinney's, which is a huge, very, very well-known mechanical contractor and systems integrators. Kenny, these guys are world-class. They're as good as anybody on the planet. And we've gotten to know Fred through some of the conferences, and Fred is very concerned with cybersecurity. And it was great to see Fred. Fred's actually going to come on and probably do a monthly show with us, Kenny, where he's going to sort of break down the cybersecurity news of the week.
Awesome.
But one of the things that he echoed that you had said, Kenny, was that no matter how good a security system is, it gets back to the breaches typically happen with your people or people making errors. And I mean, you told me that before from your experience with the Air Force. So for example, one of the things that can happen is passwords, they make the passwords really complicated, so it's hard for people to hack in on them. But then because they're hard to remember, people write them down. So wherever they wrote that down now becomes a portal in, correct? So that's a big thing. And then Fred sent me this video as an example. And this video was the editor of Wired Magazine, Kenny, had his social life totally digitally hacked, okay? And they walked through step-by-step how they did it. Now, the guy at Wired basically told these people, because he hacked his Twitter account, and they were tweeting him.
Teasing him, yeah.
And teasing him with it. And so he basically said, hey, look, you know what? I just want to know how you guys do this. If you'll share with me how you did it, I will not press charges. So they agreed to that, and the video, and I'm not going to give it away now, the video is a step-by-step about how they hacked into his digital world and took over everything. And the most interesting thing about the whole thing to me, Kenny, is they were teenagers. So I encourage you to watch this video because it'll open your eyes.
Sure, well, it did mine, I think you have brought it up more than once about the new techniques and new technologies and new biometrics and what's it going to take to make this more workable, create a solution where we get the best of both worlds. We don't have to remember 8 or 9 digit alphanumeric sequences for our passwords, where a new technology could give us the ability to touch a photograph or a picture in a particular sequence and that would be a password system. And wonder how long it would take people to figure that out and compromise it. But, I mean, what do you see happening with this thing? Is it just, I mean, where does it, where's the breaking point where we come up with it? Do you think we'll have a new technology that will replace PIN numbers and passwords? Or do you think, is everything going to have a biometric feature? Or can that be compromised? I mean, where does this end?
I think you told me, Kenny, and at one point in time, that every system can be compromised. So I think the game is, you want to come up with the hardest one to compromise. Now, one of the technologies that I've been following, one of the trends is out of England, and I'll see if I can find the video, or maybe we can even get the guy to come on and do the interview, but they've developed a technology in conjunction with, I think it's MI6 in the banking industry, where instead of using a password, you use a photo. So there's a photo that you take, and maybe it's like of you and two of your kids or whatever, and there's a sequence at which you touch the photo. And that sequence is, so there is no password, because apparently if you can have a machine can eventually figure out what the combination of the numbers are, and probably with the picture too. I don't know enough about the technology to know, but Fred thought this was an incredible idea. So I'd be very interested in people that are more knowledgeable about security than I am to reach out in comments and sort of let us know if these guys might be on the right track. But the thought process being, if you've got an image, that you're familiar with, if your family or whatever, then it's very easy to remember the sequence of how you touch that image, whether you touch, like, you know, your wife's nose, your daughter's hand, a picture of the moon, and then the dog or whatever it is to get in, that you'll be able to remember that, so you won't have to write it down. And so some of the banks over there are using those now. So instead of you entering a password to get into your banking account, up on the screen comes an image. You touch the picture, the sequences of a picture that you're familiar with on the image. And at least from what I'm hearing, that is working very, very well in England. So I wonder if that might be an answer in our industry. Because, again, it could be an image that's on a touch screen, like to get into an office or whatever. But it also could be an image that's on your computer. So I don't know about you, Kenny, but I'm in this, like, vicious loop of passwords. My Apple account is driving me crazy. Because what happens is, that you change your password, or you enter your password wrong, like, twice, and then they make you change your password, which basically means you have to go back to the main thing, and they ask you these security questions, right? Like, one of mine was, what was your favorite car? And, you know, dude, I've had so many cars, and I can't remember what I put down, right? So then again, that would be someplace I would have to write that down so that somebody could probably hack in. But I'm literally having to change my passwords like once a week or what. I can't keep up with them. I can't remember them. So all you people out there who don't return your emails, is because I can't get into my email account because I can't remember the password. And they've got me locked out. They figure I'm trying so many times to reset it so much, I must be a hacker. So it's vicious, Kenny. It's craziness. So there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a simpler way. But are you running into that where, first of all, you got to change your password. Then it doesn't like the password you use. So now you have to come up with something really, really complicated. Then you do have to write the damn thing down. Then you're out and you don't have the notepad with you or whatever where you wrote the password down. Then you try to get in your system and then they make you reset it again because you didn't get it right. It's craziness.
Well, if you consider, we track how many times we do this in a day or whatever. If you took the average number of passwords that the American family uses in one day in this year, 2015, you'd have to be up around, 10 per person. So each household has a possible 100 passwords that are in use every day. I mean, every single business account we have, whether it's Honeywell, Johnson, Siemens, Dwyer, I mean, whoever, you have a password. And each one has a different requirement. Some of them have 8. Some of you have to use an ampersand or some kind of a symbol. Some has to have a capital, a number, so that you don't even get you can't even formalize yourself. I mean, even though it's not, to me, it's based on risk. You know, if you have if you can lose something or you can expose private data that's important to you, then you should go along with the layers of security that are necessary to protect that. If this is just to get into some account to see some entertainment information or something, you know, at very low risk, you should be able to put in a low-level password to meet, the possible break or breach of security. But the fact that you can't stay, there's no consistency, too, in this password you're talking about, and that's the problem for me. You go into Tritium and Honeywell account, you know, they have to two separate passwords, two different sign-on names sometimes, because they'll say the sign-on name is already in use or whatever. So you're right. The modern mind is either going to become able to remember photographic memory of your password. But I think a solution's coming. I think, again, it's all layers. It's got to be, if you make one thing too hard and it doesn't work, then it's no good. People aren't happy. People are going to find other ways. They're going to do dumb things because they can't handle the password requirement. So I think there's going to be more technology coming. It has to constantly change because as soon as you get somewhere, even your photo, I mean, some brilliant person is going to look at that photo and it's just going to be nothing but, it's going to be a matrix. You're going over an inch, up an inch. He's going to he'll convert that into some sort of grid that he'll be able to figure out every one of your pokes will equal some number. Or some point on an XY axis.
Well, yeah, but think about it, Kenny. You get to the layers, and Fred Gordy mentioned this. So imagine now you go to your ATM machine, right? And so you have to have a pin on your ATM machine. So you put your pin in, and then up comes your image. And then the image, then you have to touch the sequence on the image. Now it gives you double
layers. So that's a
layer,
right?
Nobody could even get to the image to try to do the hack unless they had that first layer. So something like that could be very, very economical in a way. I can't wait to get Fred on the show with us, Kenny, because he is such a bright guy.
I hate to tell you that, what's going to happen? It has to be something that is unique to every single person, like a fingerprint or some sort of a biometric, matrix where, it can't be compromised, or you have, like you see in the movies, even the bad guys. So if you use a finger, the guy cuts off his finger.
Yeah, that's I don't want to do that. I like my fingers and I like my eyeballs.
So, I do think that there's so many smart people out there, and you got people like Billy Rios that they really do go to work every day and try to figure this out. And I think we're at the tipping point of where the technology is going to create a great solution, and it's going to be something to do with it, that you wear. I mean, we have another post coming up here where we talk about where people prefer to wear things and where wearable technology is succeeding. Everybody has a preference. Some people like it on their watch. Some people like it on their glasses. Some people like it on their shoes. Some people have in a pocket. And we have a post. We'll talk about that where 5,000 people were polled where they want to wear technology. But it's common because contextualization isn't a choice anymore. It's here. It's going to be everything's driven around your phone. So maybe your phone will be your security device that interfaces with your passwords.
Kenny, I think the biometrics is really interesting, but I think that's expensive, right? I mean, and maybe it'll become less expensive. Just like we talked about the race to the small space, and that's, there's an opportunity control-wise. I think that there is a huge opportunity for the way we're going to do security. And you're right. It might be your smartphone. It might be biometrics. I'm sitting here thinking, you're talking about this stuff. My Tesla is software driven, and they download updates all the time at night. I'll come in and they'll go, okay, we just uploaded a new software to your car. My car runs off of batteries and software. So I'm sitting here thinking, well, hell, man, maybe they'll hack my car. I'd be driving to Florida and all of a sudden it gets turned around and I find out I'm in Pittsburgh or something like that, So it's a fascinating, fascinating thing, and I think we will continue to track it on Control Trends. And our friends at LinkSpring have a really good solution, Mark Pitok and those guys. But Fred is—he's a deep dive. He lives and breathes and eats this stuff. So it'd be great, Fred, if you're listening, man. It was great seeing you last week, and we look forward to getting you on the show. So we'll get him coming. We got a couple of shows coming. We got him. We got Bill Duckelberger from Blue Ridge Technologies will be producing a show for Bill, which will be all things lighting. And then our friends from Sierra Monitor, which I think are going to be our guests next week. Kenny, if the baby doesn't come, we'll have Sierra Monitor on to talk about the show that they're going to be doing. So it's exciting if you sort of think about all the great minds we have in our industry and the fact that we're able to connect with them in such a way that we can hopefully start getting them on and bring some of the best minds and best thoughts to our Control Trends community, which is worldwide, Kenny. We look at the stats, they're everywhere. So special shout out to our friends in Australia. And we'll be talking a little bit more. We got one of your countrymen is going to be on the show here in a little bit. Well, as a matter of fact, Kenny, what do you say we just bring him on right now? Tell us about our next guest.
Love to, Eric. I'd like to introduce Richard McElhaney from AirMaster. As you said, they're out of Australia. Very interesting company, on the rise, went from 5 to 500 employees, and we'll have their link to airmaster.com in Australia on the website.
Way cool, Kenny. All right. Well, hey, Rick, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for that introduction, and also thanks to you and Ken for the opportunity to be involved in controltrends.org.
Rick, again, thanks so much for taking time to be with us on the show today. How did you happened to become involved with Project Haystack?
So in answer to your question, our organization implements advanced building automation and enterprise energy management systems for facility owners and operators. So my company is AirMaster Australia, and we're a large national mechanical services provider here in our market. We regularly need to connect disparate systems to accomplish our customer goals. Open and standard protocols leave, they help, but they leave a big gap. And that gap that I'm talking about is interpreting what the data means. So in a building automation system, we have thousands of points of information, but we really have no way of interpreting from an outside application what those points actually mean. So if I was to look at a sensor on the wall in the room that I'm sitting here, I mean, how do I know if it's a humidity sensor or a temperature sensor? So if I'm looking at that sensor from the front end of my building automation system, I have even less of an understanding if I'm coming from outside, perhaps because there's a difficult to understand naming convention that I'm not familiar with. So historically, the only way for someone to understand, the meaning of the data in a building automation system was to have an operator or a technician, dive into that system and report back and give you an understanding manually of what the points were in a building automation system. So they were the ones who could determine what they meant. But in this world of connected automation systems, that's a very manual and old-fashioned process. So there was no way for descriptive information to be captured and communicated between systems. And really, that's what we're talking about here. Being able to communicate descriptive information about the points and the data in our system between applications. So that if I have a question, to ask of an application, I can query that system to find out exactly what points there are, what those points mean, what the location of them are, what type of point it is, and so on. So the result was that in typical day-to-day building automation systems, the result is that a huge amount of time is spent and therefore cost money. That costs real money to an end client. A huge amount of time was spent reporting back on this part of the project, what points actually meant, and communicating that descriptive information to the outside world. So a group of like-minded people got together and had the opportunity to communicate and discuss this challenge and try to address it in a way that really opened up this kind of information into other applications. So Project Haystack was born in early 2011, and it was born out of those initial early discussions about how to address this problem of describing data in systems. And this idea of describing data in systems is known as semantic modeling, where we're adding information to information, okay, data on data. So I joined the effort early at the outset. And I joined in order to promote and deploy standards such as Project Haystack. and really, I'm focusing on our market. And our market is the Australian and Southeast Asian region. So I work with our own clients. I educate them about Project Haystack. I educate them about semantic modeling and what that means in the modern building automation system world. I also work with a subsidiary organisation we founded, and I apologise for the shameless plug. But Bueno Systems is a company that specialises in analytics using the SkySpark platform, and they are one of the largest deployers of analytics in our part of the world. And they have really taken Project Haystack and driven it in the marketplace as a mechanism to standardise the description of data in systems. And so I work with them to focus on driving the adoption of semantic modeling in building automation systems.
Rick, so one of the things that Kenny and I are tracking is open source and how that's working. And I mean, we see that in a lot of different industries. I guess Haystack got started with this in early 2011. And we've been tracking the progress. It seems great. But hey, is it viable? Is anybody actually using it? Do you have some projects that are actually working?
Eric, that's an important question to answer for the viewers. And the answer is absolutely. Haystack has been used in thousands of facilities today. And maybe some background for the viewers to understand what Haystack does and where it stands would be helpful. Project Haystack defines a methodology for defining descriptive data for equipment and systems and devices. That methodology, known as tagging, is very well proven and complete and stable. And you can see all this on our website. The community is continually building on that methodology with a number of additional efforts. One is to use the methodology to define standard tags for typical equipment systems. That work is ongoing as experts in different systems voluntarily contribute their knowledge to define the tags that should be applied to various equipment systems. And these are things like air handlers and chillers, metering systems, all these sorts of things that everyone is familiar with. It should also be noted, however, Eric, that there is a huge amount of of tagging and building systems that are already defined. And so this is the these are the areas that people can go and use right now that's ready to use and to implement in your building automation systems. But furthermore, perhaps more important than what's already defined is the fact that you don't have to have an approved tagging model to use Haystack tagging techniques. The methodology is flexible and can be extended. So it allows the users and the system integrators out there to define their own tags as they need while still adhering to the standard methodology and making their data self-describing. There are others in the community who build tools and plugins to enable different products to implement Haystack. For example, along with a number of others, including J2 Innovations, you know, I've been involved in the development of an add-on for Niagara AX, which obviously all your viewers are very well familiar with. And this plugin, this module, allows Niagara AX to natively speak the Haystack language, so to speak. The add-on is known as NHaystack, and it's been deployed in well over 1,000 buildings, including many of the buildings here in Australia that that I've been involved in, and our subsidiary has been involved in as well. And we continue to develop NHaystack based on feedback from our users, and you can see the feedback in the forum on the Project Haystack website, and it's available for download at no cost. The NHaystack module is free. I have to congratulate J2 Innovations. They've sponsored a lot of the development work. There's a few of us, a few other people have assisted, but they've definitely invested quite a lot in it and have donated that back to the community. Other people have built engineering tools to streamline the process of adding tags to legacy systems that don't allow for add-ons. A lot of this work, is available at no cost. And you can learn all about Project Haystack and all of the work developed by the community at our website, which is www.projecthaystack.org.
Well, that's very cool. Well, so tell us how it's being received in Australia. What sort of feedback you're getting from the market, and how's that working down under?
Yeah, Eric, the feedback we are getting is that once people understand the concept of tagging, they really click onto it straight away and immediately see the need for this sort of technology and systems. Now, sifting through thousands of data points is no simple task for just one building, let alone a portfolio of buildings. And this is what the Project Haystack semantic modeling technology allows you to do, is to organize and describe all of the data in a very large scale. So we're hearing the need for raising more awareness within the BMS contractor community and trying to organize some general education on the topic, hence why I'm here. And having said that, there is no better place to learn about Project Haystack than at the Haystack Connect 2015 conference in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So, for the viewers out there who are interested, they should see www.haystackconnect.org for more information. They can register on the website and come along and learn from everyone in the community exactly all of the exciting things that are going on in promoting this technology. And in terms of adoption, first of all, my experience is here locally in Australia and Southeast Asia. And you need to remember, particularly in Australia, we have a relatively small building controls market with respect to the USA or Europe. However, I'm pleased to say that we have two clients who are openly specifying Project Haystack here directly for analytics. We have another very large property management company who are specifying Project Haystack as a requirement for all new BMS projects. And in the last 12 months, we've completed a very large multi-building, multi-vendor systems integration at one of Australia's most recognized universities. And that's all we've established all of that within the last 12 months. The Project Haystack organization at a board level is also already talking to a global building technology standards group with the hope of working with them to embed Project Haystack in their system. There are also a number of individuals who have various implementations of the Project Haystack standard. And when I say implementations, I mean software that you can work with and use. And so these people have developed them off their own bat. It's all there in the forum. If you go to the Project Haystack website, I just gave a minute ago, click on the link in the top right-hand corner to go to the forums. You'll be able to see all of these things. And if people are interested, there's an active community willing to support individuals or companies who wish to get involved, whether it be contributing knowledge, writing software, or just being involved in the conversation. Eric, all the folks out there, all the viewers can go to www.project-haystack.org to learn all about Project Haystack. If they're interested in registering for Haystack Connect, then they can go to www.haystackconnect.org for our conference. And also a big thank you to you and Ken for your support of Project Haystack. Thank you for the time and opportunity to be here and discuss it with you and all of viewers today. Thank you.
All right, Eric, that was, again, thank you, Richard. Richard McElhinney from Air Master. Again, these guys are specialists from controls and automation down under with the right controls, energy efficiency. Control is just the beginning.
Thanks a lot, Richard.
All right, Eric, next up we have Contemporary Controls. They provided a gift to the industry. The Network Communications for Buildings is a free download. All you gotta do is put in your email address and download an amazing book that that George Thomas and Kirk Clausen and Joe at Contemporary Controls were handing out, making available to the Control Trends community at the show. And then, of course, it's now available to anything. But Contemporary Controls is celebrating their 40th anniversary as a company. And on this milestone, they reflected about the technologies and the changes that impact the automation systems that they, as a company, produce, as well as how companies are interfacing and doing business, the collaboration. These guys are great collaborators, and George Thomas was part of all the open systems movements that helped smaller companies participate in the giant markets that are being dominated. The markets that once were dominated by larger companies and the proprietary systems have come and gone, and the open systems has been a solution that gives us all access to it. It's like the internet gave us freedom of not being selected. You know, building your own protocols and being able to advance them and integrate them and network them together put together a tremendous industry. I mean, they helped other people in the business make their own companies and make their companies successful, and they had a place in the market. And it was these pioneers like George Thomas and his folks at Contemporary Controls spearheaded that movement, and now they're giving it away. And you talk about experts in networking. You know, the network communication for buildings include the coverage of the following technologies, and there's 20 or 30 of them. But some of the bigger ones, you know, all the physical layers, the Ethernet, switched Ethernet, fiber optic cabling, PoE, the transmission through simple networking management, SNMP, VLANs. These guys mastered all those networks and provided the tools and the routers that we need to be able to integrate and pass information up and down the networks. And thank you very much, Contemporary Controls. Hats off.
Well, hats off to him, Kenny. And it's a fantastic book. You and I, they were giving them out away at the Control Trends Awards, which George Thomas was inducted to the Control Trends Hall of Fame this year. And they were giving the books away. You and I both got an autographed copy of that book, which is what a give back to the industry. These guys, like you said, experts in what they do. And for them to give that back there it is. Phenomenal.
I just looked at it the other day. I needed some information on it. And, I'll tell you, whoever...
Hold that up again, Kenny, so they can see it. There you go. Yeah, perfect. Perfect, perfect. Yep.
But I had my first reason to go in there and verify something. Because you take a guess, and there's no point in guessing. When you have that accessibility, that kind of technical information, great source document for the correct answers, which is always good in our business.
So Kenny, I tell you what. So, you know, one of the emails I got this week, people are asking if my halo fell off behind me here. And just so you guys know, that is not a fallen halo. That's actually a Dyson fan. Okay. So it's a pretty cool thing. But, that's not I never had a halo to begin with, Kenny. So that's not what that is.
I know that, Eric. You don't tell me. No, I'm kidding. No, it's a pretty cool looking fan. I'm anxious to see what your new studio looks down there.
Well, I tell you what, right now, for our listeners may or may not know, Anna and I moved here to a new place. which was just crazy. Like I said on a previous episode, if you want to know what crazy looks like in the dictionary, just look at the picture of us moving with her being 8 months pregnant. We sold our house and moved, but so it's a great new house. It's got a big basement that's unfinished, so we're going to finish that out, and that is going to be the Control Trends studio. But right now I'm in a bedroom up top. It's a little cramped in here, but it is okay. And but the studio is going to be something else, man. I think you're going to start coming down a little bit more, and we'll be doing some more live shows. And, of course, we have the studio at the office with Mike Bonner. Set that up, and he's just done a fantastic job there. So if you're a Control Trends fan, you can see the quality of the videos has gone way up, and we're doing a lot of live stream training now. So
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too, Kenny. Me too. Well, that's right. You're coming down here the middle of April because we've got Controls Group North America, a member group that we're both members of, the top distributors in the country. So we will be going to Savannah, Georgia for that.
I'm looking forward to it. That's definitely going to be opportunities to go golfing, right? In fact, the first event of the CGNA meeting is a golf outing, and I'm really looking forward to it. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's, what, the 21st through the 25th, I think it is.
Yeah, it's going to be good stuff. And Savannah is a beautiful city. You can see a lot of that if you've ever seen the movie Forrest Gump. Most of that was filmed there in Savannah. It's the old squares and stuff like that. It's a very old, beautiful, beautiful city, Kenny, and it didn't get burned by Sherman because he had a mistress that lived in Savannah, so he spared Savannah when he burned all of Georgia. So Savannah's got a lot of really old history and beautiful homes and beautiful trees, and it's just a gorgeous city, and there's a lot of ghosts there. Apparently it's a haunted town. I guess Sherman's wife haunts Savannah. Because of the mistress, but yeah, you can go on ghost tours and stuff like that. So we'll when Kenny and I get down there, we'll shoot some footage down there and post it so the Control Trends community can check it out. All right, Big Dog, what do we have up next?
In the winner's circle again at the Control Trends Awards 2014. I think it was the action of Dave Alaban and Sam Johnson. Their dance is overwhelming. These guys were having fun. David Alaban, of course, is delighted because he has just received the wireless solution of the year. It was a joint one with the Candigo folks from Schneider Electric. Sam did a good job. It's a great mixture of everything. The technology and the place earned by Thermacon in our industry, the new technology that Inotion is just really making its inroads is in certain applications. And Thermacon has that product line, and they also have a very, very good hardwired product line as well. But looked like Sayon had a good time there. Looks like it, you can see a lot of the background of the show. It was quite an event, and I think this is we're about halfway through the awards, aren't we? As far as the recognition inside the winner's circle.
Well, we've got quite a few, and I've got to do a little bit of a rant here, Kenny, because as you know. We really pride ourselves on producing quality work, and as part of our being able to use the venue, we kind of got stuck with a lot of charges, and one of them was they insisted that we pay one of their videographers to do parts of the show. So to me, the video with Kent that was shot with Sayon in the winner's circle, and then also the video with me on the red carpet, a couple of things that we wouldn't have done. First of all, the quality's a little grainy to our liking, so it's sort of not up to our standards. But also the audio, it was the wrong mic was being used, so there's a lot of background noise. So that aside, I just want to point out that is not our level of quality. As a matter of fact, I was reluctant to even post them. But in fairness to people like David Alaban and the rest of the people that won, we felt like even though the quality wasn't what we would normally accept, we felt like that to capture the moment, we need to put it up. So there'll be more in the winner's circle with Sayon Johnson. We haven't even started editing the red carpet interviews yet. I just sort of can't bring myself to it, Kenny. It was a little disappointing that quality level, but we do have Vladimir, the guy that we paid and brought in. Vlad's working on his video. The video that we shot was meant to be really B footage or extra footage just in case, and so we didn't. But anyway, I sort of digress a little bit about that. But it was a great show. We're really happy we did it, but boy, it was costly, and boy, did we get hit with a lot of charges that and a lot of things we didn't run into in New York. If you look at the videos from New York, a completely different story because we were able to use our people on it. And again, I'm probably ranting a bit here, Kenny, but it's this is important to me. It really is, I think, and I know it's important to you too. Meaning that you know, the people in our industry, the whole point of those awards is to create archives of our great people and companies and products that that is captured in perpetuity. I think that's a vocab word. They can be in the Control Trends Museum one day, and when it's not right, it bugs me.
Yeah, especially when you know, I think your motto is, if you're going to do it right, you know, and the and there's a little bit of expect when you pay premium prices to get premium quality, and having the we have Vlad doing the professional summary. We'll have another 7 minutes of magic video coming here shortly, and to see that quality, and then see the quality that you did, compare it to actually cost more than all of them put together. It is a little disappointing, but I think that again, something is so important, it has to go in. We'll be able to put a little asterisk there and say it wasn't Control Trends work, but it is there, and you're right about that. Perpetuity. I like that. I think you're the only person I know that says that.
Well, I tell you what, though. I mean, where else are you going to get David Alaban dancing like he was and seeing him so happy? I mean, that was...
What's the song in the background?
Yeah, it's the song in the background, and David and Seon are both boogieing, and it's I mean, you just... That spontaneity, you're just not going to get that a whole lot. So again, congratulations to Seon and Thermacon and David Alaban. Man, I tell you, he can bust a move, can't he? Is it bust a groove, bust a move? What is that thing, man? I don't know. Been listening to the 70s channel on the Tesla. So getting back into that old music. And yeah, speaking of that, Kenny, your brothers tell me you are like the number one disco dancer in Pittsburgh. You used to have the white suit and all that stuff, and can still cut up. You and Rita go dancing quite a bit.
Well, Rita and I love to dance. That's how we met. I asked her to dance, and the rest is history. 32 years later, we're still dancing. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, we like watching Dance with the Stars, as silly as it sounds. And I get everybody makes fun of me, so I don't care. But it's very hard work. I mean, you did tango dancing. What are you talking about?
Oh, I know, man. I mean,
you don't know how hard that is to do things and make it look easy, but but you have to have a good partner. You have to like to do it. But sure, it's a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, get a couple beers in David, and you got to give him room. You got to give him space.
Yeah, I've been with your brother David. I tell you what, you give him a couple. He gets a couple beers, and whether he's on the golf course or the dance floor, you got to give him some space.
You better edit that out there, okay?
No way we're doing it. David, you know I'm right. You know I love you, man. So cool. All right. Well, listen, Kenny, what do we have up next, big dog?
Well, you were commenting again on where's wearable technology? Where's Google Glass been? You know, we did some really important work at the RealCom show, IBCom last year. We met David Lorenzini, who came from the world of GPS and took that technology and put it into a wearable fashion and helped create the concept and then the reality of Google Glass. And you had mentioned where to go, where's the wearable, where are we at? Well, they had a wearable technology show, and Augmented Optimism was the name of the article. The source here is from the IT, handheld technology coming from IDG Connect. It was the a show in March here where they are saying now that CEO of augmentedreality.org, a nonprofit dedicated to promoting technology, is really saying that the future is going to be awesome. And he was the keynote speaker at the wearable technology show. And the predictions for wearable technology are going to go into a bizarre growth. And he said, if you're not in it already, you're going to be in trouble. But by the year 2020, a big ambition, whatever, he said it took smartphones 10 years to go from 0 to 1 billion. 10 years to go from 0 to 1 billion. And he admits that he thinks his prediction that augmented reality could be the same way as conservative. His organization's report, smart glasses market, is towards 1 billion shipments. By the end of this year, we will see 1 million AR or smart glasses shipped. Next year, we will see 10 million, and that figure will reach 50 to 100 million by 2018. So the answer, Eric, is there's a silent 800-pound gorilla out there selling a lot of these. And I got to the thinking, there was two things you were curious about. Was one, does Google Glass have all the market to themselves? And they actually are getting severe competition. You have the smart eyewear. You have Sony Smart Glass, OLED, O-L-E-D. It adds a layer of convenience to your life. You have Italy's Glass Up. You have laser AR. You have ORA, Aura, digital augmented reality glasses. You have Arthur, A-T-H-I-E-R Lab Air, which is augmented interaction reality. And these are used by the aircraft industry. Every day, every guy's coming to work and take these glasses, and it gives them the steps to do the checkups on the engines and to make sure they don't miss any steps. They actually interact using their glasses. And then you have the Japanese Mimi, M-E-M-E, J-I-N-S, Jins, M-E-M-E, Mimi. And this is all about your body. This thing here measures your everything going on in your body. It's almost like it's a wearable doctor. It's monitoring your heart rate, your sugar. I don't know what else it's doing, but it's a great post. But
But imagine that, Kenny. Imagine you're wearing something like that, and all of a sudden you're walking down the street and an ambulance shows up because your vitals have shown that you're about to have a stroke. I mean, it's incredible. I got to talk to you. Dave Lorenzini, if you're listening, from Google Glass, who the man, the myth, the legend, Ken Smyers, interviewed a couple of times, and Dave was one of the – did he invent Google Glasses, or he was very much involved in it? And we keep begging him. He designed them. Okay, he's part of the design team. And Google, we still have this offer. You send us a pair of those Google glasses, we will wear them on the show. Right, Kenny?
Indeed.
Indeed, we'll wear them. And so, again, I was talking to Fred Gordy about this. And see, I think where Google Glass might be missing the mark is that I think maybe the hipsters are not so much into it because, you know, they might rather have a smart watch or whatever. But, Kenny, I'm telling you, the glasses. And I was telling Fred Gordy about how, you know, the post we did about the guys in the oil fields where you got a tech that's back there at headquarters. He's monitoring all these monitors. And the techs that maybe are not quite as savvy have got the Google glasses. And he's out there telling them, okay, look at this. Okay, change this thing to here and this to that. And Fred just thought that was an unbelievable idea because they've got such great techs. But what that would allow them to do, because they service so many different systems, they could have an individual tech for each product line and have them do a super, super deep dive on that because they got great techs that are out in the field. And now all of a sudden they're working on an Andover system and their Andover deep dive guy there is looking through the Google glasses at what the other guy's doing and can hook it up. I mean, you know, it is, I think that the wearable eyewear for our industry should be huge. As a matter of fact, I'll say this right now. Hey, if you guys want us to be a distributor, any of those companies you mentioned, Kenny and I will both be distributors for those products. Let us sell it. We'll promote them to the industry. Let's create an industry special. I think, you know, when Fred Gordy, for example, got to really thinking about it, he was going, man, that's a great idea. And I think, you know, a lot of the service contractors or people in service industries, whether they're our industries or somebody else, I think this is going to be the thing. I think, you know, you're going to have your shirt, your company shirt with your name on it, and you're going to have your Google glasses, your smart eyewear. I just, you know, imagine what that would be like. I mean, you know, the guy comes into the counter and for our business needs to pick a part up and the guy's not, maybe the driver's not familiar with what he needs and your counter guy is holding it up because your driver's wearing the smart glasses and the guy in the field's going, no, not that. That's the one I want. I mean, the efficiencies from these things would be just really, really cool. And then somebody will develop the smart contacts.
We do that now with the iPhone. Yeah. The iPhone has made the interim step to this. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. It's already pervasive in the medical industry, operating tables, operating rooms. Doctors are wearing these Google glasses. Wearable technology is already 2 to 3 years in use in all the big gas industries, oil industries, yeah. All the heavy, heavy industries. They already got them. I was watching a video on the production line for aircraft engines, you know. That's how they're keeping the quality rate is, you know, they're not having any more failures because everything's being done correctly the first time.
Yeah.
But how about this? How about you talk about the future? How would you like to go into a wearable technology shop?
Yes.
Where you could pick out where you want. You could pick out 29% of the people preferred to be the wearable technology be to clip onto their clothing. 28% of people going into these shops want to wear it on their wrist. 18% wanted it clipped on their shoe, 15% wanted it embedded into their clothing, 12% wanted it embedded in their jewelry, 12% want earbuds, headphones, technology, assisted augmented reality there. 12% out of this group, only 12% want glasses. 10% upper arm, 6% around your chest in your heart area to measure your cardiovascular network system. 4% went in their contact lenses. And the one that really, really threw me for a loop was 3% of the people have it tattooed onto their skin. So when you're talking about security and PIN numbers and, you know, your security codes and your passwords or whatever, I honestly think that one day you're going to be able to circumvent all that memory and put something, wear it or have it embedded in your skin so that it makes it harder and harder. So if the bad guy wants it, he's going to go into cut your hand open and take out your little chip or whatever. Like,
you know, Kenny, what's going to happen? I mean, yeah, no, I hear you, but even worse than that, I think that they're going to have embedded chips for the brain. In our lifetime, we'll see that. And you know, and then it's going to be like somebody's going to be hacking your brain, right? You know, it's like, then you really have an excuse. You'd be like, Rita, I really didn't want to go to that bar, but somebody hacked my brain and just had to go.
No, Eric, I didn't. It was on, was it Scandal or one of the movies, the shows? We love these shows. Wife and I, she comes home from a hard day's work, and I'm ready to call it a day. We rendezvous on the couch there, and we watch some of these great shows. But, I mean, the ideas are incredible. There was one where the president had a pacemaker put in his heart.
Oh, I saw that. That was 24, and, I think, wasn't it?
And that's a true story, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
And they hacked the pacemaker.
And the people, one of the geniuses at the pacemakers, heard about somebody else's thing, and he said, oh, dear, you better get rid of that because you get the upgrades online.
Yeah.
You talk about upgrades. Imagine that. You're sitting there, and all of a sudden your heart explodes because the guy's put it up to full throttle there. And but anyhow, I think what we have to do is take little bites out of this, you know, every week, every show, and just keep chipping away until we meet the experts, we invite them on, we clarify, we update, and we prove, and we move on. But it's not going away.
It's not. And I tell you what, for our audience out there, give us maybe we'll put a poll up, your form of most favorite form of wearable technology. Be interested in hearing comments what you guys think. I know we got several people that watch the show a lot. Dozier Mills, if you're watching, be very interested to know what you think about wearable technology, as well as some of our other listeners. It's cool stuff, Kenny. Well, I'll tell you what, we're getting ready to round it out. We'll keep tracking the wearable technology thing. But again, Kenny and I are not ashamed. Anybody that's got wearable glasses that want us, smart glasses that would like us to have them, wear them on the show and pimp them out for you, all you got to do is send them to us. We'll put them on and we'll wear them. Dave Lorenzini, that should be Google. But if it's not, I'll go with that Italian one. Sounds good to me. I bet those are stylish. So we'll see. All right, Kenny, buddy, before we sign off, our final post of the week was another Control Trends Awards highlight. It was for Best Technical Support Person, Large Manufacturer. It was a tie this year. Greg Holloway from Delta Controls and Greg Wilmer from Johnson Controls. Congratulations, guys. That is quite an honor to be recognized by the worldwide Control Trends community for your individual efforts in supporting products. All right, Kenny Smyers, with that, we'll be getting reports from Rob Allen in the field this week. Special thanks to our guest, Richard McElhaney. And we'll have live updates from Johnson Controls at their JCI conference. A special thanks to EN007 Young for that great introduction. And with that, Kenny Smyers, I wish you a great rest of the weekend. And to our listeners out there, thanks for tuning in. And remember, stay in control.
Indeed, Eric.
Indeed, Kenny Smyers.